They say that deja vu is usually a sign of love at first sight.
You're listening to Banal of America Audio.
When I came up here for my interview, it was as though I'd been here before. I mean, we all have moments of deja vu, but this was ridiculous. It was almost as though I knew what was going to be around every corner.
Now, what about a different sort of experiment where you tried to instill the energy into something just to test it to see if it actually did have any additional, like if it changed the chemical makeup of it? Has that ever been done?
Yeah, I mean, people are trying to do that with water.
Okay.
Yeah.
And what's his name?
Oh,
the guy, the language,
yeah.
Of, right. He, you know,
yeah.
He did it with water crystals. There are people.
Right.
Josh Warren, you know Josh Warren,
mm-hmm.
Tim?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, well, he had his Genesis project. I don't know whatever became of it, but they were trying to do something with a sterilized vial of water. Lynn McTaggart has her huge intention experiments going on where she asks people to focus on a particular thought to see if it affects plants or water or whatever that their thing is for the week. Yeah. And they claim results. I mean, again, I don't know that you can prove that that's what's causing it, but
no.
Why wouldn't it?
Well, I mean just the fact that
thought has energy.
Just the fact that the people know that they're taking part in an experiment and that, you know, they're being asked to meditate or pray or whatever over the thing. Maybe that's what's setting up that self-fulfilling prophecy that we talked about before. You know?
Exactly.
That the chocolate tastes better or the food lasts longer just because, you know what I mean?
It was chanted over by Buddhists.
Right.
Yeah, exactly.
Right.
It's the placebo. And I think that's what the whole 2012 thing is about. If people believe it's going to be a transformational time, I'm sure they will be transformed in some way. And that, hey, fine.
Oh, no. So because we don't, we're fucked?
No, because for you, you'll just get up and it'll be like any other day.
Everyone's going to be transformed around us but us.
Apocalyptic Armageddon freaks that thinks the world's going to end. I have to tell you, this is so funny. I figured it was only a matter of time before somebody wrote a book about what happens after 2012. Not like mine, not a nonfiction book, but like a novel. And yeah, because see, what's happening is people are figuring, oh God, you know, what if nothing happens? Here I wrote that book that said the world was going to end. I better cover my ass. So
what's this new book about? Is it like the next big date or?
I don't know. I haven't read it, but, and I don't have any plan to, but, and the same thing happened back in the 80s. You had Hal Lindsey claiming that, you know, Jesus was coming back and the world was going to end. And then when it didn't, he wrote another book explaining why he was wrong about the first book. And then when those predictions didn't come true, he wrote another one explaining why I gave up after a while. It's like,
yeah.
You know what? This guy's nuts. But people believe what they want or need to believe.
So now what about OBEs and near-death experiences? You guys looked into those things, too. How do these sort of, like, tie into the whole theory here? Are these, like, so far beyond the realm of the normal that it's even difficult to sort of look at them in a scientific framework?
You got me zoned out. You said OBE, and I thought OBGYN. Sorry.
Jesus, Larry.
That's what Larry wanted to be, but he didn't have to.
It actually really – yeah.
Go ahead, Larry.
She's kidding. No, seriously. I totally would have been a gynecologist. But I think I would have, my first case, I probably would have gotten sued because I would have had a sign on the door, you know, no fat, ugly, nasty women. But anyways.
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
Well, you got to have some kind of standards, right? There's got to be some quality control.
Larry, I guarantee you that if you saw that day after day after day, you'd be so burnt out. Really.
You think so?
Yeah, I do.
Maybe, yeah.
Yeah, they'd all start to look the same after a while.
Wow.
Okay, what are we talking about? Oh, out of body. Yeah, which is what we're all doing right now.
Yeah, OBEs and NDEs. Like,
NDEs.
What do you make of all this? Because, Marie, you're pretty – you both really hardcore, like, into the scientific realm of you know, the paranormal and stuff. Like, what the hell is going on with these things?
Okay, I'll take the more metaphysical approach, and I'll let Larry take the scientific.
All right.
It's linked to deja vu in that these are just other ways that we might be entering altered states of consciousness, experiencing other realities that might be out there. Out of body is the classic example of the mind being separate from the physical body and the brain, that your mind can leave the physical body and go travel around and do things and leave the brain behind, which I think is why science is so, you know, they're so against saying that, that OBEs have any kind of merit, because
yeah.
that would disprove
yeah.
their belief that the brain is everything. Near-death experience, now this is interesting. It could be that collectively we are all seeing the same thing, because this is really what happens after we die. But there are certain parts of the brain that are involved, certain brain chemicals that seem to surge at the moment of death that might be causing these sort of last-minute visions. So you cannot discount, again, that the fact that this might just be a construct of the brain. I don't think it is, but, you know, that's just my personal opinion.
Yeah, and it's hard to really, you can't, like, induce a near-death experience, like, if you want to keep your medical license and all, like,
you could in a research setting, and they absolutely have. They've induced OBEs. There's a couple of centers, and I know we put the names of them in the book. I think there's one in Switzerland or something, but there's places where you can actually go and register to partake in studies, and where they trigger an OBE in you, or they trigger deja vu so they can study, you know, what you're going through and what your brain's going through.
Just like the God helmet type stuff?
Yeah.
Larry, what do you think of all this stuff?
You know, I think there probably is something to it. There is way too many stories of near-death experience and OBEs both, that there has to be something to it. You know, usually when there's smoke, there's some fire. I've obviously never had any kind of personal experience with either one, or I probably would be a wholly different person. But certainly, I think it is a possibility. There was a book that I read a couple of years ago, and I'll be damned if I can remember it, but it was a doctor that had written about where he did studies of a bunch of children that had past life. Do you remember what that book was, Marie?
Raymond Moody? Or?
No, I don't think it was him. It was...
Let me see.
Well, anyway...
All right, I'll try to Google it.
Okay, this doctor had done studies of... there's probably 15 or 20 different kids that had...
past life
memories. They basically were able to, yeah, they had these past life memories where they were able to, they were young children too, they were able to recall in very specific and graphic detail periods of time and languages and geographic structures and things that they would have had absolutely no way to have had that type of, mm-hmm. of knowledge. You know, that kind of stuff to me, I mean, this was phenomenal reading something like this.
Dr. Melvin Morse? Does that sound familiar?
No.
Dr. Melvin Morse.
No, it wasn't him either. No. I'm looking on my bookshelf.
P.M. Atwater.
Got it in here somewhere.
P.M. Atwater did a lot.
I remember it was a white book.
There's a bunch of new ones, too.
You know, reading stuff like that, to me, you know, you read about these children that can speak languages from countries, you know, 5,000 miles away, or that have memories of wars that occurred 3 and 4 centuries before they were even born. You know, that to me really kind of, that's really interesting. And, you know, there has to be something to that.
Right.
I mean, there really does. I mean, there, you know, children don't have the abilities really, and especially some of these kids that they had done the studies on were fairly, I don't know what the politically correct term for them nowadays, but they were fairly poor. So they really didn't have access to these studies were before the internet. They really didn't have access to libraries or anything else where they could have studied this kind of stuff. Not to mention the fact that, you know, 4 and 5 year olds probably would have a hard time comprehending, you know, Latin language,
yeah.
things like that.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So, you know, that is interesting in itself. There have been a lot of stories, a lot of things that I've read about near-death experiences. In fact, I actually met a gentleman at the Atlanta conference that had a near-death experience, and I went to lunch with him. And we were sitting there talking, and I asked him, you know, what was it like? Was it the tunnel that you walked down, the light at the end of the tunnel, and you're greeted by all the family and everything else? And he said, it was kind of like that, he said, but it really was more of a personal type thing. He said that he's read all the same stories about people that have had, you know, well, go to the light at the end of the tunnel and your family's waiting for you and they're going to greet you and bring you into heaven and all that stuff. He said it was kind of like that, but a little bit different in that he thinks that it's tailored to each different person, that the experience is not specifically the tunnel, the light at the end of the tunnel, and the family, that it really is, I don't remember exactly how he worded it, but it's a much more personal type experience than just that. And, you know, it was very convincing what he had said about, you know, how he clinically died, he was dead for 10 minutes, and, you know, the things that he was experiencing. There has been recently, and this has only been within the past couple of months that I read about this, that there was an actual hospital that was doing some research on near-death experience where they had placed, and I think, Marie, you know this one too, so I'm almost positive I sent you a link to this, where they had placed a card with a number written on it on the ceiling. Do you know what I'm talking about?
Oh, yeah. Okay.
Okay,
yeah, where they had placed it up on the ceiling out of visual view from the operating table, with the theory that if the person was able to die and then somehow come back,
right,
that if they were floating around the room looking, that they would actually be able to see that number and have some recollection of that number. So I don't know what ever happened with that. Did you guys ever hear if there – I know it was extremely controversial that a hospital was doing that, but did you guys ever hear of anything – came about that?
No. It just rings a bell, but I don't know exactly what, you know, where or what happened with that whole thing.
Yeah, I just got a couple of new books on NDEs, and I'm trying to find them in my shelf of 10 zillion books. I mean, it's ongoing. The research into NDEs and deja vu, it's very intensive. It's ongoing.
Well, the thing with the OBEs, too, is that it raises sort of an interesting paradox, and I heard Dr. Stephen Browdy, mm-hmm. recent interview with him, and he kind of raised some similar sort of issues regarding, you know, mediums and ESP and that kind of thing. But like with the like let's take for example these kids that you're talking about, Larry. Like you run into the paradox where it's like you don't know necessarily if they're recalling a past life or if
right.
they're accessing the ether,
exactly.
Yeah,
right.
Out in the field. Out in the grid.
The Akashic field or something that they're able to access and draw that information from. Yeah, exactly.
Right.
And how do you get a 4 or 5 year old to explain to you, you know, where this information is coming from?
Yeah, they probably have no idea.
Exactly.
That's the wall you run up against, I guess, when you're trying to decipher this paranormal stuff. Because you,
right.
you know, once you get into, like the example he used was like, you know, the medium might tell you that your dead uncle's will is like in this desk drawer or something. And if you go and find it, yeah, it's there. But you don't necessarily know that he didn't access it through ESP instead of actually talking to the dude.
Right, right.
You know, so it's like...
That's something that we have talked about really getting into is this information field, the source, whatever you want to call it. Because there are corresponding scientific concepts, and if it does exist, which I don't know how you'd prove it, but if it does, it would pretty much explain everything. It would be like the theory of everything for the paranormal and unknown anomalous fields.
Well, you just wonder where the hell it's all
directly
going.
Directly into information theory. So, you know, people in the scientific community are talking about information theory. Everything mm-hmm. comes down to information. Well, that information is stored somewhere. It's hanging around somewhere. And maybe some people are better at accessing it than others.
Yeah.
But, you know, then again, why that to me is the most fascinating aspect of the whole thing is how are some people more able or apt to do that? You know, again, does that come back to some sort of weird brain chemical thing mm-hmm. that's going on? I mean, why is it some people have that special gift and then, you know,
yeah, but wait, what if
like
everybody does? What if it's just lying
possible.
Dormant in most people?
But what is the mechanism that causes
right.
those special people to be able to experience those things? You know, we talked at length about DNA and about mm-hmm. some of the unused portions of DNA. You know, maybe, you know, there's so many possibilities, but why is it that, you know, some people have these abilities and the people that do have it sometimes are people that don't even want it, and then
right,
there's
exactly.
there's people like you and me that are, you know, would
we want it.
Love to have an experience like this, and we can't have one.
Then you get into sort of like also something you cover in the book is like savants and stuff like that and how
yeah.
it, you know, what, like how
it's
how
the brain.
Yeah. Yeah.
The brain, I think, you know, Larry and I have talked about it. We always think of the brain as the creator of reality, but perhaps it's really acting more as a receiver. So if everybody's brains are a little bit different, everybody's brains are going to receive a little bit different information. I mean, it may just come down to that. If you've got brain damage and you've got one particular part of the brain that doesn't work, you know, that may cause another part to work overtime.
Yeah.
And then you have the savant syndrome. So yeah, the brain is the most important tool, but there's still something going on outside the brain to make all this happen.
Yeah, it's like they work in concert together, but we don't even know what
exactly
what the thing is that's working in concert with the brain is.
Exactly. Right. Consciousness, mind, you know, is it collective mind, whatever.
It's weird. That's what it is, Marie.
It is weird. It's really weird.
Kim, have you never had any of those type? Have you never had an experience like that? Have you never had like an out-of-body experience or an astral travel or anything?
No, never had anything like that.
Nothing really? Do you want to?
Why? Are you offering? No.
No.
Yeah, Larry has a side business where...
Yeah, he induces...
Yeah, for $5, I'll hook you up.
$5?
$5, he hits you with a 2x4 or something, and you astral
travel.
You'll
see stars really close up.
No, I've never had anything like that. How about you? Have you had any experiences like that?
You know, I've never had an out-of-body experience, but I've had... I've definitely not had the near-death experience, but I've had the... lucid dream. I've done that several times.
Mm-hmm.
I've had that.
Yeah,
I mean, maybe a little bit of a stretch from what we're talking about, but I've definitely had that. I've also had, Murray, what would you call that dream? Remember I took that picture of that thing that I drew? What the hell would you call that?
Oh, my God.
What was that?
We were going to try to decipher that.
What did you draw?
He drew images and, like, word phrases. Weren't they in Latin? I still have it.
I don't even know what the hell they are.
And it was about like a doorway to another dimension or something.
Oh, Larry.
Infinity. You had the infinity symbol, and you.
It was like.
From what I remember,
like shit
you drew
that I didn't
it.
Even know what the hell it was, but I always keep a pen and a piece of paper next to my bed because I wake up in the middle of the night sometimes with ideas for stuff, you know, or things that I need to do, shit that I need to do throughout the day. So, you know, I'll wake up at these weird hours and I'll write stuff down. Well, I had this weird dream. But this wasn't really a dream. This was more of like a vision or an image of stuff. So I just started writing this stuff down, and I fell back asleep. I didn't really think about it till the next morning, and I'm looking at it. I'm like, what the hell is this?
What did
and I
do?
I took a picture of it with my phone and sent it to Marie, and she looked at it, and I guess she recognized one of the things that I didn't.
It was
and then the rest of it made
the
absolutely no
symbol.
Sense.
Yeah.
Do what?
It was the infinity symbol that you had. It was laying on its side. But, I mean, you had words in Latin. Remember we both Googled them at the same time? It's like, oh, my God, they're actual words. They made sense. Something about a doorway to, you know, to another level of reality or whatever.
Jesus,
I don't know what kind of dream that is. It's an informational
and Tim, I don't drink. I have never done any kind of a narcotic in my life. I mean, there was no explanation, no unnatural explanation for what the hell this was. I mean, I've had that. I've had a lost time incident. Actually, me and a bunch of people in my group had it. We all lost almost 3 hours worth of time we lost on an investigation that we were doing. So, you know, I've had some weird stuff, but, you know, certainly not the really cool stuff that some people have had. I mean, the near-death experience, while I certainly don't want to come close to dying, I think it would be very interesting to see, you know, if what my friend had told me was actually true, that it was a really personal type experience, or if it was really kind of the generic light at the end of the tunnel kind of thing.
Well, but don't
you know,
they
I'd like
about
to
a personal
that.
Review of your life? That would make it personal, wouldn't it?
Well, yeah, I think so to a certain extent, but I meant the actual, you know, do you see your relatives? Do they greet you? You know,
right,
all that kind
okay.
of stuff. Yeah, you know, it's actually interesting. I'm a Rosicrucian, so I've been reading through a lot of the stuff that I get from them.
Yeah.
And I'm up to like the fifth book that they sent me. And I was reading through that the other night. I'm not supposed to tell you, but I'm going to anyways.
Can
it's
I
like,
put it on the show?
Yeah. It's like secret knowledge. And yeah, I mean, yeah,
oh,
I don't think it's anything.
Secret.
I don't think it's really anything all that bad. But,
you're going to get
you know,
branded, man. You're going to get branded by the Rosicrucians like on Lost.
one of the concepts, and I'm still trying to wrap my head around this, is that, basically, and I'm trying to remember exactly how this was worded, but the life review process after death basically lasts until you're reincarnated. So it's not, you know, where a lot of people think that, you know, you sit there and you're judged and you see this life review. The Rosicrucian perspective of that really is more that you're judging yourself.
Yeah.
And that you're sitting there and you're reviewing this really as long as it takes until you can judge it and then reincarnate. So it's kind of a little bit of a different perspective on what, you know, religions generally tend to think of. But it, very interesting. I mean, there are so many different rituals and rites and everything else that's associated with death and everything. As a matter of fact, we're writing an article right now for Taps Prayer Magazine about some of the weird death celebrations throughout the world. And, you know, all of those things, I mean, it's just, yeah, it's just really interesting. I mean, that's what makes things so much fun, I guess, in life. I mean, all these mysteries that we've got and all these unknown phenomena, things that we're exploring. I mean, I guess if we ever truly knew the answer to everything, life would be a pretty damn boring thing.
It would, but how would you really know it was the truth?
Yeah.
What if they ever figure out out-of-body experiences and people can just do it on their own? Can you imagine, like, what the world would be like? They'd be like all these...
Nobody would be at their jobs. Nobody would get any work done. Everybody would be out traveling, traveling.
Yeah, it would be like The Matrix. It'd be like all these bodies.
But, you know, we laugh at that, but that's probably why we're not meant to do that kind of stuff. How would we function as human beings if we were always out in the ozone somewhere?
That's true.
Okay, here's an idea. Let me float this out there since we're getting really kind of deep and philosophical here.
We're deep into the morals, yes.
What if our daily lives, where we actually, we go through the day, going to work and spending time with our families and doing all the things that we do, what if this is really our sleeping period, and then when we go to bed at night, that's really our awake state, kind of a flip-flop toggle there.
I mean, that's been suggested. That would be great because, man, my dreams are a whole lot more interesting than my waking state.
So you're saying like the dreaming, like when you dream and shit, that would be like the real reality?
Maybe that's the real reality. And
talk to the Aborigines. I mean, to them, yeah, the dream state was just as important as the waking state, if not more so. That's where they got wisdom and knowledge.
Yeah, well, it does seem to be a school of thought that puts a lot of stock into the import of dreams.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it seems like, I never really gave it much thought till I got further into the esoteric, and then it was like, maybe there's more to dreams than I thought there were. You know, some people think, like, when you dream, you're kind of like what Larry's saying. You're in a whole different universe or something like that. So
I think so. I mean, you know, these people go on the news and, I'm a dream interpreter. If you dream of flying, you're sexually repressed. It's like, you know, get out of town. If you dream of flying, it's because you want to fly.
Exactly.
Fly in your dream. I mean, this BS about the subconscious working out its kinks, I think that might apply to some dreams, but it certainly doesn't apply to all of them, and definitely not lucid dreams.
Yeah.
Because when you're lucid dreaming, you're consciously aware on a particular level, maybe not fully conscious, but you're definitely not operating off the subconscious.
Now, completely off the beaten path here. We've talked about Larry's strange experiences. Marie, have you ever been on a ghost hunt? Seems like something that Larry would.
I have.
Okay.
I hate to say this, but they kind of bore me to tears. I get bored really easily. So if something doesn't happen, I'm like, okay, come on. That's not my thing. I've had a lot of metaphysical experiences, I guess you could say.
Yeah.
During meditations, I had a very traumatic, I guess you could say an out-of-body experience as a kid from a traumatic event. I remember when I was a kid, I used to go out in nature because we had woods behind our house and a lake. And honest to God, I must have just completely lost track of time. And I would just, it was like having an ecstatic experience. So mine have been all more, a little more metaphysical. Ghosts, UFOs, no. Not really.
Yeah.
I've had a couple of things. I had an encounter with a family that had a poltergeist, very, very violent one. I never saw it firsthand, but I saw the damage that it did to the family. It was a very good friend of mine. And that was probably, you know, the scariest thing that's ever happened.
Weird.
But I was in MUFON for 15 years, never saw a UFO.
Oh, man.
Never saw something that I couldn't explain. Never went on an investigation and talked to witnesses and was not able to explain, you know, what they probably saw. I think I'm too analytical. You know, daughter of a scientist, I just automatically go into left brain mode
Yeah, well, it seems like the more you're into this stuff, the less likely you are to have a cool experience, unless you had a cool experience that drove you into it. Then,
yeah, I mean, I think those experiences are right brain driven. I really do. And I think when you start writing and researching, you know, your left brain is kicking in maybe a little bit too much. Maybe because I write book after book, I need to take like a few months off and just turn the left brain off and maybe something will happen. But
keep the faith.
Yeah, keep but you know what, Tim? It's happened enough in my life with enough regularity that it keeps me going.
Exactly.
I think the last thing I had, I can't remember. Well, I had a cat that I loved so much. It was my first cat. My ex-husband had given it to me for an anniversary present, and after it died, for about a year, he and I would feel it jump up onto the bed at 4 o'clock in the morning every morning. Because that's when it would come in the room and jump up on the bed, and we would see the depression in the quilt where it would lie. And, you know, it was kind of cool. It was like, oh, wow, there's Elvis. And when my son was born, my cat's personality was very, very distinct. He was a bastard. He was just a brat of a cat. And when my son was born, he literally had that same personality, and it was almost like the cat went into him. So his middle name is Elvis. that's my ghost story.
Wow.
Things have happened enough. I've done some ghost things, like on the Queen Mary and stuff. I don't know what to say. I have been to some places where people have literally told me that nothing has happened, but they were rumors were built around this particular place to attract tourism.
Yeah.
And yet you've got people going there by the hundreds every weekend saying that they're having experiences. That really kind of bothers me.
What is the Whaley House?
There's a number of them, yeah. There's a number of them. I do admit, though, as a kid, have you ever been to the Hotel Del when you've been down here?
No, I've just been to the Whaley House.
Okay. Well, the Hotel Del, they had a wing that was supposedly haunted, and they kind of cordoned it off. But they were building a gift shop. This was like 20 years ago. And I remember, no, actually more. I think we had just moved here from New York. I was a teenager. And we went as tourists, you know, and we're going into this gift shop. And I remember coming close to the cordoned off area and feeling like I was going to throw up.
Oh, God.
This feeling of just blackness and doom. And I didn't know about the hotel's reputation until much later. So who knows? I might have been picking up on some energy, or maybe, you know, there were a lot of loose wires around and I was just having some EMF effects. I don't know, but yeah, it just really bothers me. I go on Facebook and there's all these groups going to these locations that I know are not haunted because I've read about the history.
Yeah.
But they perpetuate the belief that these locations are, and it's almost like this tourism industry has been built up around, you know, ghost hunting.
Yeah. You keep waiting for the bubble to burst.
I would say that it's innocent. I mean, maybe Larry can speak to this. I would say that it's innocent and everybody's having fun, but I think it's detrimental to people that are really trying to figure out what the hell's going on out there.
Yeah, I agree.
I don't know, Larry, what do you think?
Yeah, I totally agree. We've got, we have a location here in Arkansas that was on one of the Ghost Hunters episodes. And after the airing of that show, this place basically has been booked months in advance for the ghost tour that they have. And there's absolutely nothing going on at this place, but they have completely, completely embraced the whole haunted aspect of business. And basically they build themselves as this haunted hotel now. So, you know, they derive the vast majority of their visitors for people that are coming to see the ghost. They're coming to have experiences at this thing. And, you know, do I have a problem with that? Yes, I do. I think that it's deception, first of all. I mean, they are selling something that is not truly, that there's really no way to quantify as being, you know, a truly for sure thing. And, you know, secondly, it's just not good karma, I don't think. I mean, doing that kind of stuff I really don't. I don't think it's a good idea. I mean, certainly the shows on TV and things have really brought more exposure to our field. They've definitely brought more people to have an awareness of paranormal investigation as a whole, but these locations, you know, that are billing themselves as haunted or whatever, mm-hmm. you know, all it's doing basically is it's, I think, propagating it's this self-propagating thing, and yeah. you know it's made it also very difficult for real investigators like my group to get in locations, because now these people, all they care about is the almighty dollar and the fact that someone that they believe to be legitimate has certified them or whatever is being haunted. So yeah. anybody else that wants to do any type of legitimate research in the place, they want to charge you an arm and a leg to come in and investigate it.
Yeah.
And I don't think that's right. I mean, the people that are deriving all that money from that, it's just not, you know, it wouldn't bother me as much if people billed it as, you know, this is for entertainment, this is for recreation,
it's,
you know,
legend,
have fun.
Legend
yeah,
is that it is.
But, you know, to bill it as something that you have absolutely no way of saying for mm-hmm. sure, it just is not, that to me is just not good.
I mean, you cannot tell me that every single one of these places where a traumatic death has occurred is haunted. Because if that's the case, the place I'm living in would be. Okay, somebody was killed here 20, 30 years ago traumatically. Almost every house in the country would be haunted.
Yeah, every hospital, nursing home.
Total
yeah.
BS. It's total BS that, and especially the one that kills me the most is the one associated with The Shining.
Yeah.
It's like nobody wanted to listen to the fact that everybody was saying there's, you know, that was all made up. Same thing with the Queen Mary. It's total BS. I know I'm going to get a lot of shit for it, but I don't care.
Yeah.
It's like, no, it's people are in denial. They want these places to be what they want them to be. Now, I will say, though, if you get a bunch of people going into these places and they so believe that they're going to have an experience that they actually do, that is a whole nother ball game, because now they're going to perpetuate that myth. Well, I was there and I had an experience. That doesn't mean the place was haunted.
Yeah, exactly.
No, it doesn't.
I don't know. I found out recently from some people in the paranormal community that I'm not thought, I'm sort of a pariah for saying stuff like this. But you know what? I don't care. I'm so sick of the BS. It's gotten to be a popularity contest. Which group is prettier and hotter? You know, who's getting the next TV show? Nobody is taking what they're doing seriously. Nobody. That's not true. There are some groups out there. And I'm so sick of this. Our group is scientifically based because we've got equipment.
Right.
Hello?
Yeah.
I have a video camera. Does that make me Steven Spielberg? I wish.
Yeah.
I don't know. I'm sorry. I mean, you know, Larry's much more immersed in this than I am. So, but from my vantage point, I see the bandwagon hopefully is about to break. And the only people that are going to remain are those of us that have been there from the beginning.
Exactly. Well, anybody in the paranormal community that doesn't like you, Marie, is, first of all, a fucking clown. Second,
they're
not serious about wanting to understand this stuff, because you're one of the most serious hardcore researchers out there, so.
I don't think they expect it from a girl, honestly. I think they think I'm going to, you know, come off as, there's a lot of women in the ghost hunting field. There's not a whole lot of women doing what I'm doing. I think they think I'm going to come off as being very submissive. But as a writer, I get to see everything from the outside vantage point.
Exactly.
And, you know, I've always admired the people. Like, this is one of the reasons why Nick is so high on my list, because he's not in the fray of all that crap.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and that's why Larry and I just, you know, that's why I wanted to work with Larry. We're in the field, but we're not of it.
Exactly.
Does that make any sense?
No, that's how I feel too about myself.
Yeah.
So yeah.
We're in it, but we're not made of it.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
I don't know, Larry.
Yeah.
I don't want to speak for you, you know?
No, I mean, I completely agree. I mean, we're like our own worst enemy. I mean, I've been in the field long enough to know that, I mean, it's a lot of times it's just complete bullshit. I mean, there are so many groups that are out there that are so competitive, and they're all about image and, you know, who's got the spikiest hair and who's got the biggest boobs and t-shirts and, you know, there really is a lot of ego, unfortunately, that's involved in it. And, you know, to me, I would disagree with Marie from the perspective of I don't really see this going down. I mean, this is kind of the whole paranormal investigation field. It kind of ebbs and flows, and there's cycles. and it may go away, but it's definitely going to be back. I mean, paranormal investigation really has been occurring for about 160 years since the birth of the spiritualist movement. So people have been interested in this for a much, much longer period of time than these stupid TV shows that are out there.
I think the subject will shift,
but I think, you know, that mankind, until we actually have some definitive answers as far as what happens after physical death of the body, this is always going to be an interest, whether it's something
But you know what? 20 years ago, Larry, it was UFOs. Everybody wanted to be involved in UFOs. Now it's closed,
but I think the UFO thing... You know, I don't know a whole lot about that field. But I would say the difference, though, between the two things, and the reason why the UFO thing really hasn't continued as much as the ghost thing is probably for a number of reasons. One, there's a significant amount of fake evidence that was out there with the extraterrestrial stuff. And then two, it's such a reactive type investigative experience.
You're
investigating something basically after the fact.
Exactly.
Now, if you look at that from, switch that around and from the paranormal perspective, this is actually something that we can investigate proactively. You can set up a recorder in your house. You can do, you know, EVP recordings on
your phone.
You can go look for it versus the UFO thing. It's damn near impossible to predict where it's going to, you know, where the next touchdown is going to be.
Right.
So I do think that, yes, it's maybe going to go down a little bit, but it's certainly not going to go away. And that the serious people are going to stay in the field just like they always have. But I think we're going to continue to have new and upcoming people and probably a lot of douches in the field that we shouldn't. But that's just kind of the way that it is. I mean, it just kind of ebbs and flows like that. It's probably like that in a lot of different
fields. You know what? I mean, it is. It's just the circus quality that we have seen, or carnival quality almost, that we've seen as of late.
Yes.
For someone like me who can kind of say to myself, screw that, I can go write about other things, I've been really tempted to do that, and I don't want to because my heart is here.
Right. And I just thought of this, too. I think another reason why you're seeing much more of a exposure to the paranormal, really, than anything else is because of the breadth of communication that we have today with the internet, with Twitter, with Facebook, social media. You know, all of those abilities that we have now that we didn't have 10 or 15 years ago have really helped to hook up a lot of these people that have this common interest.
Yeah, that's so true, yeah.
So we can blame it on the media and on technology.
Yeah.
Just like we blame everything else on the media and on technology.
And if you really want to get into it, you could blame it on the almighty dollar. Because unfortunately, you know, this is something, or not, I shouldn't say unfortunately, this is something that everyone universally has an interest in, and the advertisers damn well know it. And
yeah, but
they propagate
it also,
these shows.
But the psychological aspect of people wanting to follow, I mean, in general, people are followers.
Sure.
So you. I mean, the whole idea of sheeple, I never see it more pronounced than I do in the paranormal field, even more so than politics, where you've got people that will follow anyone who claims to be an expert, you know, irregardless of what they are, what they've been able to prove or it's that part of it bothers me. Like the money part, you're right. The advertisers are always going to be right there salivating. But it's the people that blindly follow, that don't have any ideas of their own, no leadership qualities of their own, never had an original thought in their life.
We hate those people.
No, I don't hate them.
Oh, we don't hate them.
It's just that what's happening is it's like the hamster on the wheel. They just keep perpetuating the same research over and over, the same ideas, the same theories. Oh, my God.
Well, that may be when you see the ghost thing kind of run out of steam then, maybe, when it's like, you know, how many EVPs can we really get? How many?
Millions of
or, I know, it's like,
more?
Exactly. I think maybe it'll reach some point where these people that are out ghost hunting are like, you know what, dude, I don't want to go out this weekend. Yeah, like.
This is boring me to tears. We've got 10 zillion EVP. We've got, you know, 90,000 hours of video and photos. At some point, don't you have to kind of set all that out in front of you and say, okay, well, what's the cause of all this?
Yeah, the ghost hunting seems like it's just a study of the symptoms of this whole thing and no actual study of, like, what's causing it all.
Exactly. And you know why? Because it's boring to sit in a room alone and write or think or theorize. It's much more exciting to go out there in that social, and I absolutely understand that. It's fun. It's exciting. You feel like you're a part of something. But nobody seems to want to do the harder work of, you know, trying to get your brain to work.
Yeah.
Right.
I
don't know.
Yeah. Anyway, see.
I better shut up while I'm getting off on this thing here.
So,
but see, I don't run a group. I have a different perspective. So I am not speaking for anybody who's in a group or runs a group. I am speaking from the writer's standpoint.
Exactly, yeah. You don't have to qualify
and
it.
Writers can say whatever the hell they want. That's why I'm a writer.
Now, I missed you guys between 11-11 and the new book here, the Deja Vu Enigma. So I guess just tell us a little bit about what the Resonance Key was all about so people can go out and get that, because chances are...
Do you even remember?
By the time I speak with you next time, we'll be on a whole different book, so
oh
it's going to be lost to the ether of our conversation. So, you know, what's Resonance Key, and, you know, people should go pick it up, obviously. What's it all about?
Larry?
Go for it.
Are you eating?
No, I'm not eating.
I think he is eating.
Are you watching porn
eating.
Again?
I am not eating. No, actually, I haven't eaten yet, actually.
You're watching porn, huh?
Yeah, that's it. I'm checking out Women of Walmart.
The Women of Walmart. Tim's going to go on that site as soon as the show's over.
Yeah, we'll put a link up to Women of Walmart so listeners can find it and check it out.
Oh, there's such good butt crack shots, I swear. It's awesome. All right, The Resonance Key, the subtitle kind of explains it's exploring the links between vibration, consciousness, and the zero-point grid. And basically what the book is about is how resonance, whether we're talking about sound, vibration, you know, frequency, how that quality, that essence seems to have a whole lot to do with how we perceive and manifest reality. The book includes everything from healing with sound to levitating objects with sound waves, how sound affects us, how infrasound can cause paranormal experiences, how our bodies have different resonance. Not just that, but the Earth itself has different resonance levels and frequencies, and how all of that ties into how we perceive and manifest reality.
Interesting. Okay.
It's a deep book. I think people had a harder time getting it than, you know, 11-11 was about the power of numbers, and Deja Vu Enigma is about the brain and the mind. But the Resonance Key really took some of the concepts that I wrote about in science and that Larry and I ended up talking a lot about and expanding on and updating.
Yeah.
How consciousness plays a role in, you know, what your reality is. What is the missing link, that the mechanism that allows you to create reality or see reality? Is it vibration? Is it frequency?
Interesting. Okay, so that's in the Resonance Key.
Larry, you have anything to add to that?
No, I mean, that pretty much sums it up. For whatever reason, the book was, I thought it was a great book. I mean, I think it's a spectacular book, but for whatever reason, people seem to be more, not as into that as they were to 11-11, and probably Deja Vu now as well. But
I think it was way too,
I think it was maybe a little ahead of its time.
There you go, yeah. Well, then, okay. Well, we'll get ahead of our time here now, because you got another book coming up called The Trinity Secret. What is that all about, and what's the status on The Trinity Secret?
The Trinity Secret is like half done, I think. This is a really hard one to describe. There seems to be three levels of reality. There seems to be a three-part process to creation, and this three-part process is found in just about all religious traditions, world mythologies, creation stories, origin myths. It's found in psychology. It's found in studies of the brain and consciousness. It's found in quantum physics. So the number three, for some reason, is very profound and sacred in all these different arenas. And because of this, because it is tied into a three-step process by which you take something out of nothing and create physical reality.
Hmm.
I know that's really profound. It's not a paranormal book. It is in no way a religious book, despite the title. It's just one of those things where you start to notice the connections and the bigger pictures. And for some unknown reason that we hope to explore, the number three is deeply involved.
Okay, so it's like an expansion of the number three part of 1111.
Yeah, it actually is. It actually is. And actually, some of it is taken from a thesis that I wrote years ago when I was in ministerial school. And when I submitted it, you know, the panel that reads it and judges it, they were shocked because they had never thought about this triune symbolism as anything other than something, you know, you see in Roman Catholicism. But if you look around, it's there. The Greeks knew about the Romans, the Sumerians, the Babylonians, you know, indigenous traditions and cultures. For some reason, there is a prominence of number three in the way that they view reality and how creation came about and how we as humans also create our reality, too. It's directly linked with the law of attraction, which is very popular right now and actually has some basis in quantum physics. So it's taken it further out there.
Nice. Now you say that's half done. So what's the, you know, you got a plan to when that's going
to
drop?
It's supposed to be out, I think, April 2011. And we're supposed to have another book right on the heels of that.
What's that one about?
I have
tell
no
us?
Freaking clue.
Oh.
Yeah, I have no idea.
I have no freaking, well, we have a couple.
And unfortunately, I don't think we're going to look out and the publisher is going to tell us which one to do this time.
Yeah, but you know what I noticed, Larry? It's every other book. Okay, so it was 1111 was the publisher's idea. Resonance was ours. Deja Vu was the publisher's idea. Trinity was ours. So the next one.
That's going to be the publisher's idea.
Yeah. See?
Yeah, hopefully.
Pattern. It's all about pattern.
Have some faith, Larry. Jesus.
I know it.
Gosh. He's getting a little tired here. Well, I guess we'll wrap it up. We'll wrap it up here. I just love talking to you guys. I could talk all night, but I know you got things to do. And
well, we'll have to do another session at some point.
Absolutely. As I said, at any time there's a BOA audio season, you guys are going to be involved. You don't have to worry about that. It's become a tradition now.
Absolutely.
And I just love our conversation because they're so laid back and loose. And, you know, you kind of – I'll be honest. The last year's show was just so loose that I think it kind of inspired sort of a shift a little bit of the program in a way to an even more looser
really?
Style. Yeah, because
really?
It's sort of
– oh, my gosh. We are so powerful, Larry.
You're
honestly.
Influential
yeah.
big time. So for those folks who are like, but all of America is way too loose now, you can blame Larry and Marie.
They said bad words. Didn't Larry say the F word? He dropped the F bomb. Oh, my God.
Yeah, Larry had some crazy stories on that show.
Yeah.
It was wild. It was so much fun. And this year with our Women of Walmart segues
Woo-hoo!
And all the other stuff, it's keeping the tradition alive. So
it is. You hope alive, brother.
paraexplorers.com is the website. That's where folks can find out more about you guys. Of course, the new book, The Deja Vu Enigma, A Journey Through the Anomalies of Mind, Memory, and Time. Hopefully we've given you a pretty good look at all the different stuff that's covered in there. I mean, like I said before, you look at the cover, it's a lot like the 1111 book. You think, you know, how could you write a whole book about deja vu? But once you get into it, you get further and further into, as I said, the forest of weirdness and into the mind.
Yeah, and you have to look at that subtitle. It's all in the subtitle.
Exactly. Anomalies, mind, memory, and time. So all that stuff's in there. And
yep.
It's just fantastically researched, as expected from you guys. Like I said, I don't know why anybody in the paranormal community would have a problem with you guys, because you do the legwork and the actual research. So,
well,
I mean,
speak our minds.
Every time I read your stuff, I learn a shitload of new information that I never would have had the wherewithal to go out and find myself. So, I mean, hats off to you guys for that.
Thank you.
And once again, thanks for coming back on the show.
Thank you, Tim. We will be back.
Anytime.
Yeah, right, Larry. No, I'm just kidding.
Yeah, if he could fit it into his schedule.
He doesn't cancel on me three or four fucking times ahead of time.
Oh, whatever.
All right. That does it for this week's edition of BOA Audio Season 5. Big, big, super huge thanks, of course, to Marie Jones and Larry Flaxman. You definitely want to go out and pick up their new book, The Deja Vu Enigma, A Journey Through the Anomalies of Mind, Memory, and Time. And, of course, pick up their other books, The Resonance Key and 1111, The Time Prompt Phenomenon. And if you want to find out more about them, go to their website, www.paraexplorers.com. Pretty simple, all one word, paraexplorers.com. Check it out.
Moving right along now, it's time for BOA audio listener feedback. And this week we got three emails. Actually, they're technically not emails. One of them is a tweet because I sort of culled the various places where people can reach me to try and hit on all the different zones of correspondence. So we'll start out with the longest email. It comes from Ross in Grand Rapids, Michigan. This was sent to me via the BOA Audio Hotmail account, and here's what Ross has to say. I've caught your show a few times in the past few years, but recently rediscovered it and have been making my way through Season 5, which I've just finished. Nah, not so fast, Ross. We're not even done with Season 5. Huge props. The show is great. I must say I'm addicted. It makes my work day go by so much faster. My favorite episodes thus far have been the Jim Mars season premieres, Joshua Warren, and Jason Offit. But every episode has been great. I found the show from links on thedailygrail.com, which is another great resource for esoteric everything. I do like how the show has a lo-fi feel to it, but I do have to say that it can be hard to hear your guest on tiny laptop speakers. Also, don't worry about dropping the occasional F-bomb. It gives the show more flavor. I think I'm going to start at Season 1 now from the beginning. Keep up the good work. Ross in Grand Rapids, Michigan. P.S. Just threw you 15 bones on the donation, putting my money where my mouth is. Thank you so much for writing in, Ross. Thank you for the props on the program. And, of course, thank you for the donation. Your 15 bones definitely will help us out in a big way. As I corrected you in the email here, we're not nearly done with Season 5 yet. We've got about 5 to 6 more episodes left here in Season 5. We're very close to wrapping up the scheduling part of Season 5. I almost am certain on who all the final guests of the season will be, but we got a couple more slots left to fill. But stay tuned, Ross, because Season 5 is nowhere near done just yet. I gotta also agree with you and tip my hat to the website, thedailygrail.com. Good friend of mine, Greg Taylor, runs that enterprise. Outstanding website. You can spend all day there exploring all the stuff they have. Folks, if you are not checking out TDG, you are seriously missing out. The Daily Grail is awesome, and I'm glad Ross found us via their website. TDG has been a huge help to BOA since the very beginnings of this program and website. Greg Taylor, as I said, a good friend. I can't thank him enough for all his support over the years. Regarding the lo-fi feel to the show, thank you for pointing that out. It is sort of our calling card here on the program, that raw sound that is BOA audio. I know totally what you mean about it sometimes being hard to hear the show on tiny laptop speakers. When I put the whole thing together, I'm listening on some really kick-ass surround sound speakers here on my computer, so I probably don't take into account all the folks who are trying to listen on their iPods or their laptops and stuff. So send me your feedback if you're listening on different forms of receivers or whatever the hell you want to call it, and let me know if it doesn't work for you. I suggest grabbing a pair of headphones, Ross, plugging them into that laptop. You should be good to go from there, or just crank the sound up if you have to. Hopefully it's not too much of a problem, but since you seem to have listened to so many episodes, I guess it isn't. Once again, thank you for writing in, Ross. You kick ass. Best of luck up there in Grand Rapids, Michigan, and thanks again, of course, for your donation. The next email, or should I say tweet, comes from Gregor in Toronto, Canada, also known on Twitter as @DJGuber, @DJGUBER, so @DJGuber. And thankfully, since it's a tweet, it's short and sweet, and here's what he has to say. The Soviet ufology show was amazing. Thank you. That's all. Thank you, Gregor. Thank you for the tweet. Folks, go out and follow DJ Goober on Twitter. And thanks for the props on the Soviet ufology show. That was all Paul Stonehill. He brought the goods in a big way. It's not the last of our international ufology episodes, although I'm not sure if we're going to have any more here in Season 5. We're always looking for more international guests for the program. And, of course, we love the international listeners like you, DJ Goober, in Toronto. And finally, we got one more message. This one comes to me via Facebook. And it is from Daniel. No hometown listed. Here's what he has to say. Love the podcast. More JFK-related shows, please. Also, do you plan on having Jim Mars on to talk about his latest book? Thanks, Daniel. Thank you for writing in, Daniel. We should do more JFK-related shows. I think maybe, if anything, it's the oversaturation of JFK experts and avenues to discuss. Although now that I'm thinking of it, there is a guest that I've sort of had in the on-deck circle that I've wanted to lock in for a while, who is JFK-related. So there's a good chance there may still be a JFK episode here in Season 5. Otherwise, stay tuned for Season 6. Speaking of which, I definitely plan on having Jim Mars on to talk about his latest book. I have already picked up the new book, The Trillion Dollar Conspiracy. I'm looking at it on my desk right now, and I can assure you, as long as Jim Mars says yes, and he's yet to turn us down over the last 5 years, Jim will be the season premiere guest for BOA Audio Season 6. And frighteningly enough, that really is right around the corner. I'm saying probably first or second week in November. So hopefully by then, Jim will have already done the interview rounds, and people will have asked him all the obvious questions, and then we can get him on BOA Audio to kick off Season 6 and cover some of the uncharted territory of the Trillion Dollar Conspiracy. So stay tuned, Daniel. Definitely Jim Mars will be back on BOA Audio, and there's a good chance we'll be covering the JFK angle in the not-too-distant future. There you go. Those are the three correspondences from the BOA Audio listeners, Facebook, Twitter, and the BOA Audio at hotmail.com address. Thanks to Daniel, Gregor, and Ross for writing in. If you'd like to be a part of future editions of BOA Audio listener feedback, that's really simple. You just go to banalofamerica.com and click the contact button. That's the main way people seem to get in touch with me. But if you're already logged into your email, punch in boaaudio@hotmail.com. That'll get to me as well. And the other method we love to push here at the end of the program is the official BOA forum, the usofe.com, theusofe.com. Fantastic group of folks there. Always some fun, enlightening, and entertaining conversations going on at the official BOA forum. It is our paranormal playground. Not only are there esoteric discussions, but there's also pop culture and sports conversations going on as well at the usofe.com. Once again, the URL for the official BOA forum is the usofe.com, theusofe.com. And as DJ Goober knows, and as Daniel knows, I'm all over the various social networking sites. So you can find me on Facebook, MySpace, and Twitter. Just punch in Banal, B-I-N-N-A-L-L. Befriend me, follow me, poke me. It's all good. Just do not send me chickens from your Farmville. I don't know how that thing got so popular, but it is kind of mind-blowing. But those are all the different ways to get in touch with me. If you make your correspondence pithy or particularly thought-provoking, we'll try and work it in here at the end of the program on BOA Audio Listener Feedback. And now it's time for the thanks portion of the program. Allow me to roll through the list of the outstanding and esteemed BOA staff. Leslie, Chiron, Regan Lee, Joe V, Tina Senna, Rochelle Hawks, Richard Thomas, A.M. Murphy, Marla Pena, our contributing cartoonist Andy Carolan, and our webmaster, Jeremy Boston. Since the last time you heard from me, Leslie weighed in with a new edition of Gray Matters, looking at the Roswell UFO Festival and the controversy that erupted in Roswell over the weekend there between the dueling festivals. And Richard Thomas weighed in with an all-new Room 101 text interview with Steve Watson of InfoWars and Prison Planet fame. And by the time you are hearing this, we'll have posted an all-new Tina Senna's Esotericana, where she asks the thought-provoking question, is the Grim Reaper an extraterrestrial? That's one you definitely want to check out. That's Tina Senna's Esotericana. It's become the end of the program mantra, but it is definitely the truth, my friends. If you're only listening to BOA Audio and you're not reading the columns at banalofamerica.com, then you're only getting half the story. BOA, make it a part of your everyday search for esoteric news and opinion. After last week's desperate call for donations, a handful of folks stepped up to the plate and threw some change into the bucket. I want to thank them. I won't embarrass them by naming them here at the end of the program, but they know who they are, and I want to thank those folks. But I know a lot of folks are still either procrastinating on the fence or just haven't got around yet to donating to Banal of America, but we need your donations, folks. How can you help us out? How can you make a donation that simple? There's two ways to do it. If you're into the online scene, you don't mind doing the PayPal, just go on over to Banal of America and click the PayPal button. It's right there on the front page. Beyond that, we also have a P.O. box for folks who want to make snail mail donations. Here is the address for that. Tim Binall, B-I-N-N-A-L-L, P.O. Box 232, Pinehurst, Mass., 01866. And you spell Pinehurst, P-I-N-E-H-U-R-S-T. So, once again, the complete address is Tim Binall, P.O. Box 232, Pinehurst, Mass., 01866. And as always, no donation is too small, and all donations go towards Banal of America and BOA Audio to help keep the website and the audio series up and running, freely available, and commercial-free for all of our great readers and listeners the world over. Next week on the program is an episode that I am really excited about unleashing onto the folks out there listening. Our guest will be Tony Cale, author of Santa Muerte, Mexico's Mysterious Saint of Death. Tony Cale has dug into this mysterious topic of Mexico's patron saint of death, and he's going to reveal a whole bunch of information to us on the program next week. We're going to also talk about his research into magico-religious cultures in Africa and Latin America. We'll hear all about Santa Muerte down in Mexico, as well as the story of La Llorona, a famous Mexican folklore tale. We'll learn about Mexican folk saints like Lady of Guadalupe, Dr. Hernandez, and Jesus Malverde. We'll get into the drug culture of Mexico and how they've adopted Santa Muerte as their quasi-mascot, as well as sort of really their main religious figure. We'll hear about Africa's issues with witchcraft and the people that are just crazily and brutally persecuted after they've been accused of being a witch. Tony's working over there in Africa trying to help alleviate this very troubling situation. He'll tell us about his appearance on UFO Hunters, looking at cattle mutilations. We'll hear about voodoo, Santeria, the hoodoo culture of southern United States, and a whole bunch of other magico-religious topics, as well as an in-depth conversation on Santa Muerte, Mexico's mysterious saint of death. That's next week, Tony Cale on BOA Audio Season 5. And on that note, we wrap it up here for the week. Big, big thanks, of course, to Marie Jones and Larry Flaxman. Love talking to them. Can't wait till the next time we can sit down and chat. Also, thanks to Ross, Gregor, and Daniel for your contributions to BOA Audio Listener Feedback. And, of course, big, big, super huge thanks to all you great folks out there listening, the BOA Audio listeners. I am quietly confident that we have gotten things back on track here as we head towards the close of Season 5. Hopefully you won't have to wait 10 days for each new episode any longer. And we've got some really killer stuff lined up to finish out the season. So stay tuned to Banal of America Audio for some truly awesome conversations as BOA Audio Season 5 comes to a close. And it's all possible thanks to you great folks out there who support the program. Thank you for making BOA Audio a part of your esoteric audio playlist. Until next time, this is Tim Binall, thanking you for listening and signing off.